Welcome, everyone, to the very first completely unnecessary podcast with my co-host, Ian Ferguson.
Howdy.
I'm Pat Contry. You know, me and Ian talk a lot on the phone. We talk about old discussions about, you know, video game stuff, movie topics. So we thought, why not do a podcast? Three hundred episodes
of them.
Welcome to the completely unnecessary podcast. 300th episode, spectacular. Alongside Ian Ferguson,
spectacular.
I'm Pat Contry. This is a celebration in some ways, but it'll be a nice show regardless. On the show today, we'll be talking about Nintendo going after a Pokemon fan game, if you can call it that. We'll be talking about Activision Blizzard's plan to buy Kotaku and PC Gamer. That should be fun. NFTs up the wazoo again.
Yeah.
And CU Podcast 300 memories.
Yeah.
How was your weekend, Ian?
It was good. Big stuff. Windjammers 2 came out.
Oh.
Yep. And that's what I spent my weekend playing when I had free time was Windjammers 2. It's really, really good. I like it a lot. Really minor tweaks kind of across the board. They didn't change too much. I was afraid they were going to change too much and it was going to, you know, they were going to try to.
I mean, it's Windjammers. I mean, how much would they change?
Well, I thought they were going to put in some sort of like input special moves and stuff like that. I figured they would try to go that route. To spice it up, but no, they added a couple of new things. The gameplay is really fast, really sharp. Online seems to be pretty good.
Sharp.
When I was playing online the other night, there were 600 people playing online, which was actually
pretty
damn good. The lowest I've seen so far is like 130. It is crossplay between PC and Xbox, but I don't know if it's crossplay between Switch and PS4. Anyway, yeah, it's fantastic, and that was like the big the positive part of my weekend. The negative part of my weekend was watching the Bills game on Sunday.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that was hard.
I text you thinking, oh, there's no way, 13 seconds left, it's over.
I have been a Bills fan for far too long to have felt anything but dread in that moment, and it happened exactly how I thought it was going to. Why they just kicked that off and didn't, I have no idea.
Usually do that little pooch or squib kick, so like it forces you to like handle the ball, and you take at least a couple seconds on the clock.
They would have lost 5 seconds.
Because you gotta take the ball and at least down it. That takes it, and plus I forget if the clock starts when the ball hits the ground, I believe, and usually on those squib kicks, you like kick it like almost like a ground ball. So like, it would have taken at least a few seconds off the clock.
Yeah,
I believe. And so they 13. I also didn't think though that the defense would let them get three huge plays in 13 seconds. The Buffalo defense. So that's really on them as well, allowing those huge like that was they had all three timeouts, Kansas City. So it's like. If they had like one timeout, there's no way they would have been able to do it. But like with three timeouts, obviously Mahomes is the best quarterback in the game at this point in terms of skill. Like
both of them looked amazing. I mean, and that was the problem with the coin toss for me was neither of those quarterbacks weren't going to get a touchdown with the first overtime possession.
Yeah.
I mean, Mahomes came out of that as the winner and Mahomes is a great quarterback, but, Allen didn't fuck up any opportunities he had either. Really.
He put the team on his back.
Yeah.
All the rushing yards, over 100 rushing yards.
Falls on defense, which is a shame because everyone all year has been talking about how the Bills have the best defense, but...
It was a great game.
Yeah.
Great game. Well, at least you know that, you know, it's gonna turn into like how Peyton had to get through Brady. It's going to be like that. And then eventually he did. And when that's
well,
how
the thing is, we killed the Chiefs earlier in the year.
That's the thing in the playoffs. You know,
playoffs
that's what you
is
do.
Different.
Playoffs. But
talking about playoffs.
But it was great. Aaron Rodgers gone, Brady gone. I didn't think people didn't think we'd be at a point in time where people liked Brady better than Aaron Rodgers, but here we are somehow. And some like a year ago, if you told me that, I would have said there's no way in hell that Aaron Rodgers would be despised more than Tom Brady. And now Brady's like, hey, he's not such a bad dude, Tom Brady.
That Rams game was I cannot imagine being a Rams fan and having to clench your ass like that.
Wow.
For the last quarter.
The Rams, I texted Frank. I said, hey, Frank, I know that there's not point shaving in football, but if there was ever a game that they were point shaving, because the fuck ups that the Rams did, the snap which almost hit Stafford in the face, went back 30 yards. Once I saw that, I said, Ian, the mob's in on this game. They have to be, because like you don't see that in a playoff game. Like the game was at hand, and then there was two fumbles, that bad snap. It was insane. That was the most insane game ever. And obviously, we don't talk about sports a lot, but that weekend, this past weekend, was in. If this is how football always was, it would somehow be more popular. All four of those games were insane. All four of them.
Oh yeah,
they were nuts.
That was top tier football.
It was nuts. They all came down to like one score between all the games, or like walk off field goals. It was insane. The one kicker called his shot. What game was it? He called his shot. I can't keep them straight in my head anymore with the games. Whoever beat Aaron Rodgers, he said, "Well, looks like we're going to the NFC Championship game." The Bengals, yes, called his shot. The kicker. I think that's when it called a shot. They were interviewing the kid. He's like 21, 22, 23. And it's like, God, the balls on these folks. And yes, Ninja, it's very difficult to kick a field goal. I'm not forgetting that. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. No, it was. It was exciting. I mean.
You happy we're at 300, Ian?
Yeah.
We should have done the recording from the bedroom.
Oh,
no. From literally the old bedroom. I should have just knocked on the guy's door. Now owns a condo. But like, hey, we're doing the podcast from here. We're gonna set up the little.
We should have done some 300th episode NFTs. That's what we should have done.
We absolutely should have done.
We absolutely should have made NFTs, because NFTs are what the people want.
Which is what they're trying to tell you in order to pump up the people that already have their NFTs, because it's all pump and dump.
They don't
scheme.
They don't want NFTs, but Twitter has brought NFL NFT pro mixing up the.
There's no NFL NFTs yet. Is there? They don't have that yet,
buddy.
Not like the NBA.
Maybe not.
Do they?
There's got to be.
Is there NFL official ones?
I don't know, but I typed in NFL NFT and it gave me the DraftKings Marketplace, the newest place for NFTs.
I don't think there's official ones.
No, I don't know that there is.
There's knockoff ones.
Of course there's knockoff
ones. They announced a deal in September for one. I don't know if they're out yet. Dapper Labs is doing it. Okay, so maybe they have them. Dapper Labs. I love the names of these. Yep, they got them. Digital video collectibles. They're not calling NFTs. Digital video collectibles. Sorry, you can go on. So Twitter, I'll just go on. Twitter is now that has NFT profile pics as part of their Twitter Blue package. I'm on Twitter Blue now. It's $3 a month because there's good features like automatic unrolling of threads if you want. Most importantly, you can edit your tweets within a certain amount of time. But if you get that, you can now post your NFT as your Twitter profile. If you do that, you get a fucking hexagon instead of a circular profile outline.
My favorite thing that I saw about that since its announcement was someone who posted the announcement of hexagon NFT icons next to a definition of what a mark is.
Yes.
And very, very true. I'm sure they think it's a way for them to all show off how cool they think they are. It is a big red do not interact sign for me. I now know.
For us, yes, but for the NFT scammers out there doing the new NFTs, that's, like I said, they're marks.
Right, exactly. They are.
You're
marks.
Saying, I'm a mark. Come and take money from me.
Come sell me some
I'm
NFTs.
I'm an idiot. I will give you money. Like, that's what it says. And that was actually, I'll bring it up early. Excellent idea. Name is Folding Ideas. Excellent video from Folding Ideas. The problem with NFTs, it's an over 2 hour video. Strap in, watch it at 1.5x. But it starts with the history of crypto. It leads into NFTs, the type of people that are buying NFTs. It talks about his interaction on these NFT discords, all these groups, how they act like cults and things like that in order to recruit. There's like wrong think involved. You say, I you know, even if you say I got scammed on a coin, well, we don't need those negative thoughts about NFTs because we're all in this together. It's like, it's scary shit. And it's stuff we all brought up about it being pump and dump schemes and creator fool theories. That's all NFTs are. But it also point out things about like who's really the ones profiting off of these and how they're profiting. It's a great video. It gets technical, but you can still understand the technical nature of it. The post office has NFTs now. The United States Postal Service has fucking NFTs now.
I said online,
I couldn't believe that.
What's next? The CDC is going to have some commemorative COVID NFTs?
Viral NFTs. It's insane. But that's the problem, is that it's so cheap to mint these. From what I saw, it's like around $80 to mint one of these. In terms, that's your energy / gas fees to do that. That anyone could fucking do. I could do one today. Like that's the issue with it. There's no oversight into it. Anyone can get into it and post art they don't own. We talked about this. No one. There's the NES Punk NFT someone tried to do last week. You know, it's insane. The quote from the Postal Service. And usually, you know, the Postal Service, I try to stick up for them, even though, you know, the customer service is terrible to me. It's really about, here's the quote from the manager of licensing. It's really about putting out our brand in new and different ways and surprise people. You're the fucking post office. You don't need a brand. You don't need a brand. You're a government agency that people use to ship products. That everyone uses you. You get the vast majority. It's almost a monopoly. That's how many people use the post office. Every day people use the mail. Every day you use the mail service.
That is right.
You don't need, anyone who doesn't know about the post office. That's fucking nuts. But even the post office says, hey, you know what? We can make money off of idiots. Like, those Castlevania NFTs sold for a ton of money. I think I told you the map one sold for like $26,000.
Yeah, I saw. Do you think I feel like NFTs is really a product of the past few years. The past few years of people loudly and proudly beating their chest about how dumb they are and how it's a good thing to be dumb and how proud they are to be dumb and to not listen to things like science and teachers and history. People are like, NFTs, we can sell fucking anything.
Well, they're all just scams. I mean, that's the whole thing. There's tons of crypto coins that popped up and went away the past few years. It's all the same thing. Get in early, suckers come in behind, and a lot of times that's how they get people in. But as Folding Ideas point out, sometimes when they're telling you that, hey, we're pumping it now, you're the dump, you're the end of it. They're right. Telling you that so you buy more, so they got in way before you. It's all scams. It's so unethical. It's disgusting. There's obviously no regulation with this. It's all out in the ether. It's all out there. So what can you do? People are going to lose money, and they are losing money. It's just when is it going to burst?
Yeah.
I guess as long as people have money. That's the thing. It's like Folding Ideas had a great term for these people, that like these were people that are usually socially reclusive. So then they can get into these clubs. Basically, these are like digital clubs that they're a part of, with also even the belief that they're going to get rich quick. So that's an idea. Like, it's all these weird ideas thrown together. And they have enough money to blow, obviously, to risk it. So it's like the perfect, like you said, they're marks. They're the perfect, perfect marks for con artists. Perfect. And they advertise themselves. And
that's why you hear about people getting conned every day with the NFT stuff. Just opening up their digital wallet to let people in because it's part of a trade and they end up losing everything. Yeah. All my apes gone.
That's only one of the many ways you can get scammed.
Oh,
like,
sure.
There's tons. From what Folding Ideas was saying, like, there's no even a way even on some of these blockchains that you could have viruses or Trojans or malware inside of those themselves. Like, there's all this weird shit about what things you can inject inside of it. Like, it's scary. Besides the fact that, like, we talk about digital games going away. If the servers go down, the servers can go down on all this shit, on the NFTs. Like, it can be gone anyway, even if you believe in the ecosystem.
Yes.
The stuff can be gone. It's nuts. It's beyond the House of Cards. Well, this cards is a physical item. So seeing that article, NFTs are coming for your video games. Players, get ready. This is what I'm going to say about this real quick. I do think that, yes, almost all the major players will experiment with NFTs and for games. But I really think it'll be received the same way the mass public has received it. You'll get the true believers, the smaller minority.
Right.
And most people will be like, what the fuck is this? I think I read, I have to find it, that the Ubisoft NFTs, how many actually sold? It wasn't many from what I read. I had to find
out. Oh, there was an actual amount?
Somehow there was an actual amount, because I guess with the marketplace, you can probably tell like what's out there.
Well, I don't know. Did you see the other, there was the other bit of news that was going around that there are only 400,000, if you look at the people involved, there are only 400,000 wallets involved in NFTs right now.
Only 400,000 wallets.
Wallets, yeah. So that's,
and you could have more than one wallet.
You could. But even if that was all individual
maximum
people, 400,000 people, unique people interested in NFTs. That's nothing.
And that doesn't account for a lot of the scams have people buying their own shit.
Sure.
In order to say, hey, oh, look, Ian, this person, which I own that sock puppet account, bought this NFT for $10,000. It's a steal at $5,000.
That's lower than I thought. Eurogamer says Ubisoft appears to have sold a grand total of 15 NFTs. 15. When you said low, I thought 200, 300.
I thought 26 was in my head.
15 NFTs.
And that came out like a month ago?
It was November. It was in November when it came out. Yeah, and this was updated on the 21st of December, so it could be 30 NFTs now. Could be 26, but this article is saying 15 as of December after a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Love Eurogamer. Another article from The Verge talking about how most devs hate NFTs. Developers made their feelings known in the annual GDC survey. Many quotes directly from developers were scathing. How this hasn't been identified as a pyramid scheme is beyond me. I'd rather not endorse burning a rainforest down to confirm someone owns a JPEG, in quotes, owns.
Who is this talking?
This is one of the devs.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Burn them to the ground. Ban everyone involved in them. I work at an NFT company currently, and I'm quitting to get away from it, said another. Not all were critical, but 70% of the dev respondents said their studio had no interest in NFTs. 70% there. A vast majority of respondents spoke out against both practices, noting their potential for scams, overall monetization concerns, and the environmental impact. Only a few called it the future of gaming. It's all the future, Ian. It's the NFT and crypto future. It's all out there. No regulation. It's freedom. Not the fact that it's used for criminal activities and scams and things like that. And the fact that when something isn't regulated, there's a reason why we have regulations so people don't take advantage of systems. And yes, it's an imperfect world we live in. People take advantage of our financial situation all the time. But you'd rather have someone trying to be a taking care of it, like minding the sheep, basically, than having all the, you know, the foxes running the hen house, as they say. Because that's what happens with this stuff.
I think it's very funny to look at a problem and go, the solution to this problem is to get rid of all the work we've made on it so far. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah. I even saw in that YouTube video.
The world is complicated. There's no easy way to do this shit. Getting rid of regulations isn't going to magically fix problems. Yes. I laughed at it last week, but it's the same thing. These people talk about how it being a Wild West landscape is what they want until all apes is stolen, and then they go crying to OpenSea and have to have a centralized authority stop the trade of their NFTs.
When you get rid of regulation, you have the housing crash happen. That's what happens when you get rid of regulations. You have stuff like that happen.
Right.
When you allow everyone to buy houses that they can't really afford the mortgage to. You know, that's what happens. Yeah. So that survey is coming out 2 months ahead of their physical. They're doing a physical GDC this year. Okay, hopefully by then it's going to be March 21st to 25th in San Francisco. Hopefully by then, we're in a better spot with the Omicron thing going on here. They're expecting 15,000 to 17,000 attendees this year.
At GDC.
Well, hopefully. Yeah, check out the folding ideas problem with NFTs video. You can also check out Ian Flea Market Madness, Volume 44, which is out there.
44, huh?
44 of about, there's going to be about 52 or 3. This one was filmed 6 years ago.
Crazy.
They've all been filmed about 6 years ago. And
I was going to say they're all, none of them are recent.
Frank on the quest to find a serving platter.
There's
like a mini arc in there. He's like, not many mini arcs in the episodes. His quest to find a platter. And Frank was in rare form. He always is. He's not in all the remaining ones. There's some he's not in, just to let you know. 2016. That was a rough year when I was filming them, but I filmed them. It's never rough at ultimatenno.com though.
No, it's not.
It's a smooth experience. No NFTs, no crypto, just good items, good physical items.
Just good like physical items you can hold on to.
RBI baseball stickers you can use and stick on a laptop or your cat.
You may even get one of the ones that patter I just stroked.
Oh God, get our DNA today. You got the certain guidebooks that are physical there. And you have the CU Podcast enamel pin. This week, 10% off all CU Podcast items at the shop. T-shirts, pins with the code CUPodcast300. Get yourself 10% off. Get those. We're running a little below on the enamel pins. We're down to the last bag of them. So there you go. We've gone through them there.
Almost sold out.
And I'll be
selling fast.
Yeah, the allocation, as intelligently, we've allocated a certain amount in the bag in my on top of my dryer in the garage. And I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/country code as well. Call of Duty is going to stay in the PlayStation, maybe, Ian?
Maybe. So a lot of people disagreed with what we said last week, disagreed with what I said about COD.
They both said it would be insane to take it off.
It would be. But a lot of people have brought up a point that I feel like is actually more likely what might happen. They may keep these exclusive, but I don't think they're going to keep... They're going to try to find a way to sell Xbox Game Pass to Sony and to Nintendo. And I think that's what they want to try to do.
Of course.
Yeah. But it doesn't mean you're not going to be able to play it if it's on a... PlayStation,
but
if you're on a PlayStation,
but Game Pass is not as lucrative as selling you a $60 to $70 game off the bat. That's the whole point. You're not going to make up that cost. You're just not. For a new game, especially if there's like, you know, special edition ones that are more, and all the DLC that they would provide, Game Pass revenue will not come close to that. It just won't.
Well, I've already seen some articles talking about how they think maybe Game Pass is at the it's close to like the maximum of what they could expect people to sign up for, and I don't know, but it would make Game Pass seem much more a lot more attractive. That said, until they can actually get Game Pass on other systems, I don't think they would keep Call of Duty exclusive.
Okay,
and this article is saying that Phil Spencer wants to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. We'll see if that actually happens.
Let me do some Pat math here.
What
was the last major one? Call of Duty World War II, was that the last major one?
No, man. World War II is ancient. Call of Duty, the
Modern Warfare, the newer Modern Warfare.
Nope.
There's one after that?
Yeah.
What was the one with Kevin Spacey? I can't keep track of anymore.
They make them every year. It is Call of Duty Vanguard is the most recent.
Okay. I'm looking up Call of Duty World War II right now. It did over 13 million on PlayStation 4. That one game on PlayStation 4 did 13 million. So you're saying that, and Call of Duty games come out every year. They go Black Ops to Call of Duty. They revolve around them, right? It's a rotation every 3 years, right? So you're telling me that they're going to give up every year 10 million sales on a console at $60 a pop. They're going to give up a gross revenue of $600 million every year, minimum, not counting DLC. I think that they will never do that. They will never make those sales up with Game Pass, ever.
Just to spite someone in a console war? No. I don't think that's really how it works.
Now, if you want to tell me, hey, Ian, 2-3 years later, that game's on Game Pass. You know what I mean? After all, we wrung all the money. Yeah, sure.
They've already said they're going to put them on Game Pass. But Game Pass, as of right now, is only on Microsoft systems.
No, the point is that for a new game, to put it on Game Pass versus waiting, they're gonna you need to get $70 per pop. You have to.
They don't do that with any of their big releases. They don't do it with Halo. They've already said that these games will be on Game Pass.
Brand new?
Yes. That's how Game Pass works. That's why Game Pass has people who sign up for it.
Okay.
They're going to do that. The question is, can they get Game Pass on other systems? And I think
they're not getting those PlayStation sales.
No, I think that's until the they can get Game Pass on other systems, they will gladly sell $70 a pop to PlayStation customers.
They're willing to take that hit. I'm surprised they're willing to take that hit.
They've been doing it with all of their major releases since Game Pass came out. They did it with Halo. They've already said they're going to do it with all the Bethesda titles.
Okay. All right. They're really trying to bleed them then. Okay. Like as quickly as possible. So I guess, the calculus still is going to be, okay, how would you market, if you market that to the Sony players that, hey, get the Game Pass on here, maybe like on your PC then, just market it in that way. Because I don't think you're going to get the Sony people to go out and buy all Xbox consoles for it to get Game Pass. That's going to be rough still.
No, like I said, I think they will gladly sell it a la carte to Sony customers for $70 a pop until they figure out a way or work out a deal to get Game Pass on all these other consoles.
Once Sony lets Game Pass on their console, it'll be over.
And also keep in mind that they don't keep these games on Game Pass forever.
Sure.
I don't know. That remains to be seen. Some of the big new titles they'll put on there and then they'll take them down 2 months later to kind of urge people to go buy them. I don't know. We'll have to see what they do with the Call of Duty.
This is what Phil Spencer said. Had good calls this week with leaders at Sony. I confirmed our intent to honor all existing agreements upon acquisition of Activision Blizzard and our desire to keep Call of Duty on PlayStation. Sony is an important part of our industry and we value our relationship.
And if they keep it on Game Pass, I mean, that's $180 from that person a year instead of $70, you know, if they keep Game Pass for it. So they end up getting that money for Call of Duty.
Well, but there's also then the people that already have Game Pass that.
Sure.
So like it's a weird spot. I guess we'll see. It also depends when these relationships on these existing contracts will end, I guess. Sony is an important part of our industry. We value our relationship. Well, Sony's on the phone being, please don't take this off of our console. I mean, what else can they say?
Right.
I mean, they have zero leverage when it comes to it. I mean, the best example people get up like in this article is Minecraft. That's everywhere. And it would be nuts if they made that exclusive, Minecraft. Then again, that was everywhere before. So that's why I was like, I guess it's, I don't know.
Yeah, Call is everywhere before too.
It's a weird spot. I don't see it happening. Let's put it this way. I think for this generation, it'll probably be status quo for this generation, whatever generation. If there's going to be a PS6, whatever, in like 4 years or whatever, I think the Sony will be safe until then. And then at that point, maybe it's like, well, you know, maybe Microsoft at that point then says we don't need a new console anymore, or there's some hybrid thing at that point. Sure. I don't know. A lot's going to change. But yeah, I think PlayStation folks will be safe for now.
I also think that Game Pass is absolutely going to see a price bump probably within a year.
If you're telling me that brand new all the future Call of Duties and those games that cost hundreds of millions to make are going to be exclusive, yes, there's no way.
It's not going to stay at $15.
No.
A month.
It'll be like Netflix. Oh, yeah. It started at like $8 for streaming. Now it's like $12, $13.
I see. Yeah. I think a bump to $20 a month is probably a guarantee by next year.
Which people will gladly pay.
Yeah.
Probably. Absolutely.
I would. Game Pass has been ideal for me in terms of what it offers. The PC implementation kind of fucking blows. But in terms of what it offers.
Why is the PC implementation blow?
You'd be surprised at how like much an Xbox product, like an Xbox software, doesn't want to play nicely with their newest controller. They just haven't gotten like all the proper like updates out for the Xbox Series controllers. I guess from what people have said on PC, the Xbox One controller finally just got to a place where it was reliable for everything you booted up like a year ago. So Microsoft is not. Yeah, they're surprisingly like dropping the ball on the PC end of this. They can fix it, but they haven't yet.
Maybe they realize, maybe they think not many people are using the Xbox controller on the PC? Maybe that's why?
No, I mean, I think that's what they want you to use. I mean, supposedly Xbox controllers are supposed to be plug and play on Windows PCs. But the Xbox,
the old ones were, the 360 ones were, if you had a USB one.
If you had the hardwired one, yeah. But yeah, with these, it's different.
That was good. I like that hardwired 360 controller. Those were tough to find at one point.
Shitty D-pads still are.
Oh, the shitty D-pads are crap, but they were nice to have those. Activision Blizzard boss Mold Baya of Kotaku and PC Gamer. In order to change the public narrative, this comes from our pals at Eurogamer. Controversial boss Bobby Kotick recently considered acquiring video games websites such as Kotaku and PC Gamer, according to a new report from the Wall Street Journal, with sources with knowledge of Activision Blizzard's recent plans. Kotick apparently suggested the idea to change the public narrative surrounding Activision Blizzard following months of media coverage of the company's culture, history of sexual harassment allegations, and subsequent employee protests. So this is like total like mafiosa tactics at this point. Like buy them out, throw money at it to solve.
Yeah, if we can't avoid the bad news, we're gonna buy the bad news and quiet it.
Wow, that's, I don't know what to say. This deal is going to conclude, I think I saw in March of next year, the buyout, Microsoft buyout of Activision will
of 2023.
Yeah. So that's how long it's going to take to finally go through. I think at that point, I don't think these people higher ups will be there. I just don't see how you can keep them with all this bad press. I just don't see, and all the bad, I don't see how Microsoft will keep them.
Sure.
They'll be gone in a year. It'll be a long year, but they'll be gone, I think, after that. Some of the comments, God forbid Kotick would have the humility to try to address the criticisms of him and his company. Instead, Activision schemed to gaslight the rest of the world by turning a video gaming site into propaganda. What a piece of work this asshole is. So if he bought these sites, would it just become like, would they still be covering non-Activision stuff? Or would it be like a directive that, oh, it's going to be, they'll turn into like Activision Blizzard sites? Would Kotaku be like just talking about Diablo and Warcraft? I'm just curious. How would that work?
Right.
How would that function? What are you looking up there, Ian? Some Kotick stuff?
Yeah. Oh, he's just a horrible looking individual.
Okay. Someone just said, what the fuck? Reminder that post a buyout, Kotick will not only face no consequences, but will be rewarded with almost $300 million for his.
This is my big problem with it. He's going to get away with a golden parachute.
That's how these contracts work. Classic Bobby. Well, that's slightly very terrifying. Don't change your shitty behavior. Just buy up some of the outlets calling you out and make them PR for you. Yikes. Yeah. I'm sure lots of other news will come out in the next year.
Oh, it's right beforehand. A lot.
I read something about it might be a long play thing with Microsoft where they have to let it go. But once they take over, they can look at the behavior, like a behavioral clause to not pay him out all that money. I saw someone mention that on Twitter.
Okay.
That there might be a way where Microsoft can say at the end of this, they do it like an independent investigation into all this stuff. Once they control it and be like, we don't have to pay you that, whatever, the $300 million, we don't have to do that. And this is why. Okay. I just read something about that. Like I said, this is the stuff that's going to happen next year. We're a long ways away, but I read something about like, well, this may not be a slam dunk that he will get away scot-free.
I hope not.
Like there might be a clause in this in terms of like, oh, you act like an asshole, you don't get a parachute. Almost like breaking someone's tenure, so to speak. Like,
right, sure.
Like
sure,
if you're
sure.
A teacher, you can have your tenure broken. It's tough, but you can do it. You know, it's tough, but you can have your tenure, you know, revoked in special circumstances. So you would hope to be something like that, like a moral clause for something. Like, come on.
Right.
For the person that's at the head of the company.
He just looks mean. Every picture of him, he looks like he's a mean guy.
Well, it's a mirror to your soul. Your puffy cheeks, I guess. I don't know. All right. Is that it for the intro?
Ian? I guess that's it for the intro.
The 300th intro? Did we do an intro for the first podcast? We might have just said, hey.
I'm sure there was an intro of some sort. I mean, we didn't just hit record and jump right into tactics or topics.
We jumped into
into tactics.
Either the 2DS or to Ben Affleck as Batman. Which one do we do first? That's all. That's what we had.
Which
back
one
then.
Did we start with?
So whenever you think we're struggling for topics, eight and a half years in, we were struggling for topics that first week. If that's all that was going on, was it really just a 2DS and Batfleck?
Yeah.
That's all it was?
Yeah.
And now Affleck comes out saying all these years later, yeah, it was a horrible being Batman.
It probably was for him.
And now he's back with J-Lo. A lot happens.
I felt like he could have been a good Batman, but I've never seen any of the movies he's been Batman in, so.
He was a decent Batman. Just, I don't like the voice changing shit. I don't like that stuff at all.
Voice changing shit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ian, Nintendo, as you know, as we've covered over the years, has a history of going after fan projects, most importantly, fan games of their IP in the past. We've seen it for Metroid. We've seen it for Earthbound games and others.
Pokemon, probably the big one.
Pokemon, and that's what this one is. A Pokemon first-person shooter. Came online with some videos, and the creator spoke about it, and Nintendo scrubbed it from YouTube and Twitter. It is gone, with nary a gif or two remaining of it, like on this Kotaku article. This comes from Luke Plunkett. For the past month, Reddit user Dragon_GameDev2 has been working on a side project imagining a PC Pokemon game, but built using Unreal Engine that you played in first person. While your thoughts may be drifting towards something resembling Pokemon Snap, Dragon_GameDev2 had more violent plans. He instead showed off videos where players are dropped into a Pokemon-filled landscape, given modern firearms, and set free to hunt and defend themselves from as many of the pocket monsters as they liked. There's like, you know, guys got it's like a assault rifle.
Taking out a Hitmonchan, that's a Pikachu.
That one's a shotgun. What's that big purple one he's shooting there?
I have no idea.
Shooting them, blood's coming out, and they're falling dead. There's Pikachu getting some lead there. It was posted to the Indie Gaming Reddit. And then lickety-split, it was Nintendo's lawyers took care of that. And we'll talk about the author's response here on Kotaku, which we talk about. We probably brought this author up before in the past. This was the author's take. This sucks, just like it always does, because unlike many other major international companies, Nintendo seems utter unwilling or even unable to differentiate between commercial projects that infringe on their copyrights and fan-made playthings that are free and made for fun. Luke, you should know this as an article writer, that whether or not something is free or commercial has nothing to do with most copyright law. Has zero to do with it. This, for example, was the first in a year-long series Dragon Game Dev 2 hopes to complete, where they make a new game every month. Bad take from Luke there at the end, but I guess what it comes down to is this. It's We talked about Nintendo coming down on these projects in the past, like the Metroid 2D remake, which Nintendo shut down because they were developing their own that they put out. What was that, like 3 years ago?
Thereabouts, 3-4 years ago.
So in this case, it's obviously something that probably would not compete with a Nintendo product as my printer. Remember like my ghost printer in the condo? Mm-hmm. Used to happen? Or was that here? Anyway, it's cleaning itself. So shut up, printer. So in this case, this would not be a competing product, but you're using Nintendo and the Pokemon Company's IP. Nintendo is a shareholder in the Pokemon Company. They're basically synonymous in terms of like what they put out. This is wiped from the internet. So in the past, when we talk about Nintendo, should Nintendo go after these companies? I always spoke about, God, that fucking printer, I'm ready to shut it off. We always spoke about how Nintendo had a legal obligation in terms of copyright law to go after just about all these, because if they didn't, this is what happens. Say Nintendo didn't go after that Metroid game, and say Nintendo didn't go after the Earthbound games and the other games in the past. If this came up, they would have less legal ground to go after this game, because they can point and say, listen, you're coming after me. You didn't go after those other games. And that's why this stuff has to happen. And obviously, this is a extreme case. This is, like, to me, a reprehensible use of the IP, because it's a children's game and product.
I think it's amusing. I mean, it was just obviously a weird little thing someone did for fun. I don't know if it's reprehensible, man.
It's reprehensible because if a kid searches for Pokemon game, this comes up. That's why Nintendo goes after this stuff. That's why they have to.
I wish they didn't go after as much. Someone like a company like Sega doesn't go after their stuff. There's plenty of fan games, and it doesn't seem to affect them. But I understand the legal rights and wrongs of this, and I understand why they say they need to go after it. I just wish people were allowed to have a little bit of fun without Nintendo swooping in every single time. I don't know why you're so offended by someone making a stupid first-person shooter with Pokemon.
With Pokemon, which is a children's property?
That millions of adults play.
Don't care. It's a children's property. That's how it started.
Okay.
The millions of adults started as children.
It's extremely prude.
It's still marketed to... what's that?
It's extremely prude and weird that you would get offended by it.
I'm not even a big fan of Pokemon.
That's odd.
And prude has to do with sex, by the way. That's okay.
You know what I'm trying to say. I understand why they have to do it, and my response to this is not so much to get mad at Nintendo, and I'm not mad at the people who are doing it, but it's just we've seen this for years and years and years, and obviously nothing you do with a Nintendo property is ever going to be allowed to breathe more than two breaths, so I just would say stop doing it. Stop putting effort into things that you know are going to get taken down. Nintendo's not going to change on this. Go make a Sega fan game. That would be my take.
Nintendo has to go after this, because again, it's a child franchise first and foremost. They have to. And like I said, if it's not, okay, if they do this, you're going to have other stuff pop up. And this is what I talk about IP law and why you have to have protection of property. It's to prevent stuff like your property getting mended or molded into something that it was not set out to do. Like if there was no intellectual property laws, then you have people making Mario porn games and putting them on Steam. Shit like that. You get into this world where the original idea behind a creation has no meaning anymore because anyone could abuse it. That's the whole point.
Well, it also goes back to some of the stuff we said about NFTs and the voice NFTs and stuff. People not thinking about having their voice then be used to say awful things. The intent of the message is lost.
Here's some of the comments here. It's mind-blowing this needs to be said. It's like people have no clue there exist entire legal teams whose job is to hunt down copyright infringing work, or they do know such things exist. They're intentionally playing ignorance so they can get mad at Kotaku. Oh, okay, against my question. No. That's not the point here. And plus, Nintendo's not going to come after Kotaku for reporting on it, because they're allowed to report on it.
No, what this person's trying to say is they're arguing against the fact that basically Kotaku is getting shit for covering these, because every time Kotaku covers them, they get taken down.
No, that's not.
And what they're saying is, obviously, it's not Kotaku is not the one breaking the news of this to someone on a Nintendo legal team. I mean, that's their job, is to go out there and hunt the shit down.
Another response: it's weird to me that a gaming website is constantly surprised at the existence of copyright law and doesn't seem to quite grasp that the law does not require that you make money off the infringement for it to be illegal.
That is true.
The author says, equally, this is Ian's stance, equally weird for me is, despite Nintendo is the only company to go to these lengths when many others from Microsoft on down don't just avoid such punitive actions, but sometimes even work with the modders and creators responsible. Luke, you think that Nintendo wants to work with this creator? They slap together a quick little game and rip their assets from existing games in order to shoot them in the face with guns. You think Nintendo will say, we want you on your team? Your creative brilliance is gonna show through in our next Pokemon game? Come on, let's get real there. Their reputation for litigiousness aside, is there a path you can imagine that would have Nintendo protective of the child safety of several of their franchises agree to work with a developer making a game where the characters of one of those franchises are murdered? Oh, thanks. As I just said, I think Nintendo needs to chill out on legal stuff pretty much weekly, but for this is I'm not so sure.
This is not the example to make. I mean, yeah. Because you look at stuff like Sega, it's like, okay, Sega works with people. Yeah, that's because Sega saw, you know, Christian Whitehead and the people who were making Sonic fan games and said, holy shit,
you're making this game better.
This is better than anything we've put out in years. We're going to reach out to this person.
Yes.
But that is a person who is making a fan game in, I guess, good faith. I'm not offended and I have no problem with the stupid first-person shooter Pokemon thing, but that was never going to be more than a joke on the internet for more than, you know, a week. It's not like that person was going to get hired on at Nintendo to make, yeah, the next, you know, Pokemon of Duty.
Response to that,
Call of Pokemon.
Luke says, equally weird to me is that despite this, Nintendo is the only company to go to these lengths when many others. Okay. Another response was, I don't think you'd see Microsoft or Sony loving the idea of a fan made game where Master Chief or Crash Bandicoot was shot and killed, do you? That's a great point. Again, it comes from, I guess, the place where you're coming from.
I understand the sentiment. It's just this is a weird example to stake your flag on.
Yeah, that's the point. Like that's the point. If there's ever a game where you wanted to take down, it would be this. Out of all the other Nintendo ones,
these arguments would be far better made on something like, which it probably was at the time. But save your breath for the next time they take down something like a Metroid 2 remake. You know, something that actually had like some passion in it that could have been, you know, a very good commercial product. That's when you want to see the company reach out instead of shut down. This is just.
One response,
Guns and Pokemon,
said a lot of these projects will add highly recognizable IP just to get attention, then swap out the material after they have had that attention. Sometimes they are doing it just because they like the IP, but I feel like that is less common. That was happening with the, I believe it was the one of the Earthbound fan games. They were going to swap out everything. Now it's coming out.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember which one, but they basically got stopped and they were like, well, we've got a plan for alternate characters and story.
There you go. But so you can still put out your game. I mean, I guess you could put out a shoddy looking first person shooter where you shoot animals, but no one would care if it wasn't shooting cute little Pikachu or my buddy Poliwhirl.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think it was just meant to be a dumb joke.
Anyway, just a few weeks ago, we saw Peloton's stock drop 11% because a fictional character died after suffering a heart attack on one. Well, I didn't see that. I mean, today's business sways incredibly easy with
weird
the pop culture reference. Now, Nintendo wouldn't shut this immediately. It's just smart business in terms of managing intellectual property. There are better battles to be waged in the right to fair uses under copyright law, but dying on the hill that Nintendo should have otherwise allowed this or worked with the programmer is ridiculous.
Yeah, that just...
especially as it quickly goes down a rabbit hole of Nintendo then by extension endorsing the speech of the creator, which they know they can't control and can get thorny like Five Nights at Freddy's, and the issues continue from there. I don't know what happens with Five Nights at Freddy's fan games. But I'm guessing if that's like do whatever you want, maybe that went down a dark path. I can picture those mascots being used in nefarious ways.
I mean, the whole point of the game is using them in nefarious ways. They're killers.
Other nefarious way. I can picture some weird.
There's plenty of
fan
porn
games.
Yes,
exactly. That would be Nintendo's worst fucking nightmare if that would happen.
Well, I mean, there's plenty of Pokemon porn as it is. You're not going to stop that.
Well, yeah, it's hard to stop people posting stuff on there. Are you allowed to do porn on Tumblr anymore?
Not anymore, don't think.
Where do you post your Pokemon porn, Ian?
Where do I post mine? Well, when I finish drawing up some fresh Pokemon porn, I don't know.
Is Poliwhirl male or female in Poliwhirl?
Could be either.
Is it spore off Poliwhirl? Do they have sex Poliwhirls?
Yeah.
Poliwhirl's my favorite.
All Pokemon come from eggs.
They come from eggs?
All Pokemon come from eggs.
All of them.
All of them hatch from
even
eggs.
Though some appear to be mammals.
All of them hatch from eggs.
There's some mammals that have eggs.
Platypus.
There's like four. There's like four or five. Echidnas, there's a couple others.
Yeah.
That have eggs. Most of them don't. Most of them all are in Tasmania because they're good
Tasmania.
They are. Or because they're all little islands separated. And they all evolved all weird over the 100,000 of years when it came to it. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say. Can we call me prude? It doesn't do with being prude.
I mean, I don't think this person had any malicious intent when making a stupid game where you shoot Pokemon.
Well,
it's just dumb.
Nintendo's got to nip it in the bud. That's all. They nipped it. They're not going to probably, you know, sue them. But it's like, hey, you're not doing this anymore. That's it. And no one else will. I don't want to see Pokemon get shot in the face, Ian. Come on. Ian, we got a. Oh, we're in the 300th episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
300th episode. You want to talk about memories? 300th episode memories.
Yeah, what are we gonna do? We're gonna go through.
Do you have any memories of the past 300 episodes?
We're gonna go through some hash browns, some hashtags, some hashtroids. That's a memory. I just can't believe how fast this has accelerated since we started going weekly. That's probably the first thing that I would say.
It's been weekly for 2 years now, at least 2 years.
It's got to be over 2 years.
It's 2 years. I think I started early 2020. If it was before the pandemic, it was weekly, I believe.
Yeah, it was well before the pandemic that it was weekly. I think it's three.
2.5 years.
Because I think we stopped doing, by the time we switched over from every 2 weeks to every week, we were already at about 150 episodes. And then 3 years would make sense. That would add about another 150.
Okay. I'm not sure it was 3 full years, but maybe 2.5. But either way, 300 is a lot. Yeah.
And it's been easier. I stopped counting, and I said it on Twitter, but I'll say it again because it's true. You said that this has been going on for 8+ years now.
Three and a half.
I stopped counting at 5. Anytime someone asks me how long I've been doing the podcast, I say 5 years. I don't know why, but my brain just stopped adding years once we hit the five-year anniversary.
Well, I've already been here 4 years at Castle Concerts, or in 4 years.
Yeah.
So that's almost half the podcast was here, which is weird to think about. Half the timeline of the podcast was here.
We weren't
almost.
Every week by the time you moved here?
No.
Okay.
We were still, because I had Kieran doing the editing, I believe.
Yeah.
Was that part of the weekly? No, he started when it wasn't weekly. That's right. Then it went weekly, I believe. Yeah. I'll look it up. Anyway, we're getting... Off the topic.
There is no real topic. I mean, we're talking about 300 episodes of the podcast. We're talking podcast. We're talking podcast.
Has it evolved in ways you didn't see from the start?
I mean, not really. I think we've pretty much stayed on point. We stopped covering wrestling. We don't cover movies as much. Those things never really did particularly well for us anyways.
I got tired of wrestling, too.
Yeah,
it was an abusive relationship.
Yeah, no, it absolutely
watching
was.
Watching wrestling.
I haven't watched wrestling. I have not watched wrestling probably longer than the Saudi Arabia deal, but at least as long as the Saudi Arabia deal.
And that deal's around, what, 3 years already?
Yeah, that
three
was...
3.5 years?
And so probably 4.5 years. That last year that I was watching, it was real off and on. It was the occasional pay-per-view, and I don't think I've watched anything WWE since. But I do kind of miss it. I was talking to Vani. I miss enjoying good wrestling, but I'm not in any sort of hurry to rush out and just start watching wrestling again because I miss talking about it. I don't see anything that really interests me with it.
Spudmate said, listening Pat complain about past jobs was always great. Also, the Let's Play series was fun while it lasted. For like the 2 months.
I hated it.
Well, you were sick.
I was sick.
When we recorded.
Which was probably part of it. But I'm really bad about like doing anything on command or when I know I'm being recorded, I clam up and I get overly.
Being recorded now.
Yeah, but I've been doing this for so long. And I guess that's the difference. Maybe if I had been doing the Let's Play stuff for longer, I would have been more into it.
Not a happy memory, but I remember Ian's mystery illness and his struggle to get a diagnosis and recover. The episodes without him felt emptier. I'm glad he made it through.
That's another thing that I feel like I've stopped counting. I got over being sick about a year ago in my head. It's always about a year ago I got
more
over being sick. It's got to be like 2.5 years at this point.
From Matt, ranch dressing, scumbag seller from Australia. That still could be the best one. That was the thing about my dad died with the fake air raid.
Oh, that was that was one of the best scumbag sellers.
That was only a couple years in, I think. That was fairly early.
And that was one that we I think there was follow-ups to that one.
One of the follow-up.
One or two. That was one of the few scumbag sellers that ever got like a follow-up that became more of a story than just a spot on the show.
Use printer trouble. Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
I will never buy. What company was that? I don't want to say the wrong company. HP. I will never buy an HP product ever again.
I feel like they're the only company that makes fucking printers.
Oh, no. Brother. I got Brother.
Oh, Brother. Brother's all, right,
there's like three or four still. Lexmark. There's a few.
Epson.
Shaq always talks about his with like, just fill and print. You get your own little vials to put in instead of like the cartridges. Oh, there's a lot. Brother makes a great printer. HP, no, that was bad. That was a whole fucking saga, buying a brand new printer at a garage sale and not being able to use it because the fucking ink cartridges are DRMs, and the starter cartridges had expiration dates on them. Digital expiration dates on printer cartridges. Cannot make this shit up.
Yeah, so they scan it and they tell you.
Meaning if you didn't start using that new printer within a certain amount of time, Ian, with those cartridges, it becomes dead, the hardware.
Yep.
I had a dead printer that was never used before. How fuck? Getting pissed again. I talked to the really nice customer service lady, tried to help me out. But I'd explained to her, we walked ourselves through the dilemma. She's like, oh, well, maybe you can go to find another one in the store that's brand new. And I said, the cartridges have an expiration date on them.
Yeah.
So even he's got upset.
He's falling over.
The Ballad of Mike Kennedy / AVS / Chameleon, or the retro AVS, that's right. Tim Atwood becoming our savior. What a collusion. Slow withering of the Amico. It's still withering. The Collectionist, GameStop's retro initiative. God, you were gone through part of that. The retro initiative of GameStop.
I was around for enough of it because I clearly remember talking about it.
Wow.
But yeah, that was rough. The AVS retro Chameleon stuff is funny because someone pointed it out the other day. And I always kind of knew this in my head, but to put it in perspective, that stuff didn't last a year.
I thought it was about a year between retro AVS and Chameleon. A year and a half, maybe?
There was a good enough break between...
There was a break.
But, I mean, Chameleon itself was only was less than a year.
Yes, Chameleon itself was like spring of like 15 to like... Oh, excuse me, fall like 15 to like spring of 16.
Fall, because that's fall is when the toy show is, I believe.
The fall was the early the next year. That's when it started falling apart.
Ah.
But they announced that Indiegogo. It was like 8 months span is what it was.
Right.
What else?
The Tim Atwood stuff was interesting.
I got to meet Tim before he passed away. Ian's triumphant return after defeating NES.
Tim passed away?
Oh, yeah.
Tim Atwood did?
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
Passed away. About a year and a half ago. Ian's triumphant return after defeating NES. Oh, yes, the Goldberg intro.
Acness, yeah.
From worry to relief and laughter, so many emotions. Yeah, Ian hated that I did that. I did a fake out, but it was great. Ian hates half of the things I think of. People loved it. I don't have any memories.
I don't like swerves with real life people.
It was great. I don't have any memories that haven't already been mentioned, but I do want to say thanks for a great podcast. Thank you, Kate. While the questions, from Dad Ass coming in, the Q&A goat, who by the way gave $100 to the San Diego Zoo.
I saw that was
great.
Excellent. Thank you.
Everyone should give some money to the San Diego Zoo. While the questions from this Q&A goat have become scarcer, I'm thankful to both of you for allowing me to become a minor footnote in CU Podcast history. The friends I've made from listening have been a blessing in my life, and that I'm forever grateful. There's a CU Podcast community that we don't talk about too much, and they're good folks. And that's the thing about being a content creator, is that you want to cater and like your community reflects you, I feel, and what you do. And that's what we've tried to come across in that. And that's why we sort of come out on the side of I feel good over the past years and calling out bad actors and behaviors, even other influencers. You know, I got, you know, some heat. Ian was gone for part of it here for some of it with like calling out all the shit that PewDiePie used to do and things like that. And you want to have.
I got plenty of heat for that. I said something about his heart.
Oh yeah, his heart was a sewage pump. That was good. there's fun stuff that's happened, but you want to make sure that the people that follow you like kind of reflect your own beliefs and your own morality as much as you can.
Yeah, everyone I've met who's been a fan of the CU podcast has been, you know, for largely a very good person.
I don't want assholes following me or listen to me. Like I don't prefer that. If they do, hopefully we can change their mind in certain things. You know, maybe it's set an example. Every single scumbag sell the week, especially all the cats selling emulators and ROMs.
That was fun, but it got to the point where we couldn't really do much of anything else with Scumbag Seller because, I mean, there's tons of those. We could either do a Scumbag Seller every week and just rail on the same shit or wait until they're slightly different. So that's kind of why that Despite the fact that there's no shortage of scumbag sellers, we can only call out people selling ROMs on a flash drive so many times before you've heard it before.
That was from JC3. Here's the next one. Congrats on the show. The infamous air raids for sale in Australia is always my go-to. I guess that was a good one. Also, I also love the Just One Podcast.
I would love Just One
would
Podcast.
Love Just One Podcast dedicated to Bloodsport in a similar way you did Spider-Man. Oh, they mean just a conversation. Yeah, we can do a Bloodsport thing at one point. Just because it came out in the 80s don't mean we can't review it. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I've always enjoyed this guy's screen name, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Crip. Kick a Toddler.
Kick a Toddler.
Yep.
Okay, I respect that. Some toddlers deserve a kick every now and then.
I feel similarly.
The Tales from the Game Store with the sword guy and Pat commenting that Luna wasn't a store in an RPG.
In my head, the podcast already feels different just because I no longer work at Luna. It's a whole chunk of conversation that is just eliminated from the podcast. It is kind of sad to think that there will never be another podcast episode where I show up and I say, you know what? Someone tried to sell me a fucking third sword. It's not going to happen. Only two swords.
Early podcast got me through some tough times. Have since gotten engaged, which is a double-edged sword. Okay. I've gotten her into the pod, but anytime I use the word update or phrase, it's been a while. She can't help herself but repeat. Good thing I never say big, big.
Big, big.
Let's see. At Link 2, we answered a question from them October 23rd, 2013. Wow, okay.
That's got to be like right at the beginning because we started like August of that year.
We started, the end of July.
The first upload is like August 5th or something.
End of June or July.
Yeah.
No, it was. I uploaded within a day or two. I got it up. I got to look it up. But it was around that time, or maybe a couple of days. This is from at F1 Midboss, been around for a lot. I also really laughed at Pat's dad joke. Did you enjoy the multiplication as well in response to Ian's enjoying the division? Ian, some of my jokes, either Ian ignores or doesn't hear when I get these little side jokes and I ad lib when he's explaining something. I've been doing a marathon of podcasts from 2020 to now looking for that segment. Oh, wow. That's going to be a tough one to find there. From F1 Midboss. There was a time Frank randomly called in the middle of the podcast to ask how to make the volume louder on his new iPhone.
I recall that.
Frank didn't have an iPhone. He had an Android, but like that's, unless he gave up his iPhone, but I don't remember that at all. I didn't put him on the air. I just talked to him like this probably.
I don't remember, but I do remember him calling me about that. Yeah, it was here.
Okay. I don't remember that at all. Ian describing the Nintendo PlayStation auction being the biggest wet shit of a live auction.
That was, I mean,
it was disappointing. It was.
Meant to be like insulting anyone, but like in terms of what like it was hyped up to be,
yes.
It was a
people were saying a million, 2 million more, and it was
300.
Who'd have think thousand something? Who'd have think that the first $1 million game would have been Mario 64? Who would have thunk it?
Yeah,
versus something that was actually like one of a kind like that. This is from Yazin. The whole Amico saga was so incredible because of how long it's been part of the podcast.
This was what I saw.
The first clip that wasn't published, it was published in mid-2018. Yeah, it was like late summer, I think, 2018. It's been 3.5 years. Comparatively, the click with Milan didn't even last year. This is one of my favorite ones ever. Earlier one, within the first 3 years, at R1 Spam YouTube. Your Rooster Teeth versus Jeff Gertzman segment on YouTube was how I found you guys. Couple of, quote, drunken podcasters telling you how it was.
I don't even know what the hell that's about.
Jeff Gertzman.
I know who Jeff Gertzman is. I generally like
we
him.
We love Jeff.
Yeah, I love Jeff. I like Jeff.
OG journalist. He gave a non-favorable review to what's the survival game? Fallout? What's the one with the gauntlet?
Oh, was that? It's not that early. Fallout. Fallout 4, and then there was the Rooster Teeth, where they're all wearing the Pip Boys.
Rooster Teeth had the fucking balls to claim that Jeff was being hard on them for some nefarious reason for attention, while wearing their sponsored fucking Fallout wrist gauntlets.
They later responded that they were ones that they had actually bought, but it doesn't.
They were sponsored though by that game.
It does not look good to fanboy for something and then.
Fanboy for something that gives you money and then calling out a reputable journalist for not liking the game. It was a really bad look.
Fallout 4 does kind of suck.
I don't know if that got a lot of views, that segment. I'm guessing it did at the time, But boy, we tore into them. Like, it was like, and I never used went after Rooster Teeth in the past or knew who those people were that did that, but that was ridiculous. That was
it. No, it was just bad. One of those things that flatly, blatantly on its face was ridiculous.
They looked bad. This is from Steve Kennedy. The time you were called drunken. Yes, that's a good Mike Kennedy. Are you related to Mike Kennedy, Steve Kennedy? Please use the anyway sound effect. I don't use it well enough. This is from Nerdy Sasquatch. The Pokemon Platinum episode of Tales from the GameStore gets me every time. That was a good one. Television Amico. You guys roasting the Fine Brothers for their React World. They tried to claim that a format could be copyrighted and that all reaction stuff owed them tribute, the Fine Brothers.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Yeah. That was around.
And it was bad.
That reminds me. It's hard to put into words exactly, but that just reminds me of a weird time in YouTube history where everyone was like trying to get big and claim. It was very strange.
You're trying to get what, Ian?
Big, big.
I love. Chibi UFO, another long timer.
Mm-hmm.
I love when you guys discuss when Denny's had Atari games on their app and website. Ian almost died from laughter. I still almost remember falling to the ground from laughing so hard. So there was a weird response from people thinking that Atari teaming up with Denny's had tarnished, like some of the OG people, probably people on Atari age, that had tarnished Atari's reputation by partnering with Denny's. Oh boy, the naivety from where we've gone from there to now about how Atari's name has been dragged through the fucking mud.
Yeah.
Like, are you kidding me? Like you're worried about like a cute little Hasteroids game?
Right.
Like, and Centipede Pups, whatever it was.
I looked it up. It was Takeout instead of Breakout, Centipup instead of Centipede for the Pancake Puppies, and then the number one greatest of all time, Hasteroids, which replaces your ship with a bottle of ketchup and replaces all of the asteroids with patties of hash browned potatoes.
That's 2014?
2014. That was long.
Only a year in the podcast? That was 8 years ago almost?
Yeah, I knew that one was long.
I thought maybe a couple of years. A few more. This is from Kanocha 37. The Tales from the Game Store about Ian with the eagle. Was it an eagle? No, it was a falcon.
Falcon. I called it an eagle, but it was clearly a falcon.
And I thought that dressing as cardboard Iron Man is so great.
In my early tellings of it, because I was like flustered, I kept saying eagle, but it was definitely a falcon.
Talking about the first preview of the Switch, how you both had predictions but were better than most. Yeah. We didn't think it was going to be a failure.
I assumed it could be tricky, but I just
I said this is going to be a success. I didn't think it would be this. I said this is going to be a success.
Once its actual form factor was revealed, I was much more pro.
How Ian wants to slap his dick on the Atari VCS.
And I don't really.
Yeah, but there you go. There's a few more here, but thanks so much for those memories. Some more about the Jaguar and the Retro VGS, Coleco Chameleon Saga. Every time Pat mentions an NFT, cracks me up. Pat's love of Double Dragon and Ian just mehing him. No, he hates. Not just mehing. He actively hates it.
Just the first one.
At LJ Cruz, I restarted. I'm going through episode 1 to now 28. Wow, why put yourself through that hell, sir?
I don't want this to sound insulting because I love the fact that there are people who like what we do enough to go back. But especially with our podcast, even if you think there are funny bits to it, I just can't imagine sitting through that much old news presented as new.
Unless they like us doing a lot of the Q&As we did back then. Crazy, this show got me through high school, college, and now the beginning of my career. I miss Ian Snyder rants, and I'm still waiting for part 2 of Mayonnaise Shaving Cream Guy. No, it was ranch dipping sauce.
Ranch, buttermilk house sauce.
Yes.
That is a weird thing, and I got that at Luna too, but we've been doing this long enough now that people have grown up listening to this podcast.
Oh, I've seen it through the YouTube career.
Yeah.
It's when you have someone say, I was 10, now I'm out of college, and I'm like, what? It's like, what happened?
It's nuts.
Early podcast got me through some tough times, have since gotten engaged. Okay, I went through that one. Double-edged sword getting engaged.
Well, I mean, once you read his whole comment, it makes more sense.
It's just funny how that comes off. When Ian shouted big news, of course. I remember when Pat did it solo for a while, and it sucked. Love Ian. Well, thanks for the back. I mean, like, yeah, it wasn't as good, but holy shit, I suffered for myself doing them for 5 months. I mean, come on. I put out content. Come on, Reno Collector. No appreciation for Pat at all during that? Okay.
Unfortunately, it does not look like any of those Denny's games are still playable.
Oh,
anywhere.
No.
Yeah. I tried to find Hashtoroids. Honestly, just brings up a lot of advertisements for hash and marijuana.
Okay.
Yeah. That's pretty much what we got here.
We have to call the Video Game History Foundation to make sure these are preserved.
Yeah.
These games going forward. Are you serious? You can't get those anywhere?
No, when you click the link that's in the articles, it takes you to, it's like Greatest Hits Remixed or something, and then you click on it, and it takes you to some, like, music website now. But this is how, the internet is, and this is the sort of shit people talk about when they talk about NFTs being a problem. You give it 3 to 4 years, most links that you had 3 to 4 years ago aren't going to the same places anymore. Everything
changes.
Was it
called link rot, or what's the term called?
It's something like that.
URLs
yeah.
just go bad, because... the servers are gone, or the URLs are just gone.
Or, you know, pages got moved and shuffled, so the original, you know, addresses don't point to anything anymore.
And people were saying that, we can use the blockchain for, like, fucking medical records and driver's licensing. Are you fucking crazy? Are you out of your goddamn mind?
The blockchain can't hold that stuff. It can hold a link that points to it.
That's what...
I know. I'm not...
People are like, we should have all that.
Getting sassy with you.
All that great information out there. That
just getting sassy.
Well, you don't have to get sassy.
I start sassy. Yeah, well, zero is sassy.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our memories. It's been a fun 300. We'll see how long the train goes for. Choo choo.
Choo choo.
And yeah, it's been a trip. It's been a trip. It's been a more, I'd say, effective way of engaging with the audience at a more regular basis, obviously, than doing, like, you know, back when I was doing like one big video a month or two or one and a half. I mean, I used to average one video a month of NES Punk or Flea Market Madness or both, like that. You got feedback, but it wasn't constant. This is constant feedback, like,
well,
all the time.
And it's
more about, obviously, news that is...
You are presenting yourself as yourself. You are not a character here as well. That's the other big difference.
Yeah, sure.
People got to know you. It wasn't just... people, you know, being a fan of a character, it was...
And I get both.
Actually,
I get
fan of you now.
I hate the NES Punk stuff, love the podcast. I love the podcast stuff, and hate the NES stuff, NES Punk. You get both. It's weird how you get there, but, or it depends on how you found it. Or I like past personality in the NES Punk videos, or I like him better in the podcast. Like, what are you going to do?
So, since this is all over Twitter, I just want to bring this up real quick. Dwayne The Rock Johnson says that he is doing another video game movie. That's the announcement as of this morning. He has not said who is doing what video game.
Pokemon first-person shooter?
It is, but he is doing one. There have been some good suggestions so far.
He did Doom, he did Rampage, so he's done two.
I'd like to see him do a Hamtaro movie. My good dear friend John and co-host of Extra Napkins says that he would play a good King of the Cosmos from Katamari Damacy. That would be fun to see as well. But yeah, what video game could it be?
He was supposed to be in Spy Hunter way back. That was ready to go 15 years ago. Spy Hunter.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He's bringing it back.
The game is out. They put out the game.
With
the
his
movie
voice
never
acting
came out. Yeah.
We're going to bring one of the biggest, most badass games to the screen. One that I've played for years. Fortnite, the movie. There you go. Fortnite, we're starting The Rock.
Could be.
Minecraft. He's going to look like a Minecraft character. That's what you're going
to
do.
I'm one step closer to trying Minecraft again. I downloaded it onto my PC.
I played it when we went to Radies the one time.
Yeah, I tried playing it for 15 seconds at Radies. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Let this kid do it. He's going to be better.
All right, we got that in this segment at some point.
Yep.
We're done. This is what you get in the podcast. We just blabber and we end the segments.
So we do.
We have a Patreon poll.
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you pay, you get. We do weekly writings. I'll probably have one of those up by tomorrow. We do, you get the full video podcast. You get bonus podcast bits every week.
We talked about horrible pizza today.
We did. We went over the regional pizzas that are causing us stress and consternation.
That should be outlawed.
What else do you get? You get to vote in these poll topics, and you get hangouts.
In second place, hardest NES boss fights. Got shellacked, 19%, 81%. Since the start of the podcast, what retro game trend has surprised us the most?
I think the thing that surprised me the most over the past few years has been the and I say this with an asterisk because it probably shouldn't have surprised me, but the rise of sealed game selling and collecting in the retro market, specifically the Nintendo market, kind of caught me by surprise. More to the point, the focus on minor differences between releases of games, like
print runs,
misspellings,
Rev A, oval, like a solid seal versus a clear seal, all that stuff.
I was surprised to see that that stuff ended up taking precedence and also commanding more dollar value than truly rare entries. Some of those rarer games, like I always bring up, say, Supercars. Sure, not everyone's going to be excited about that, but the fact that things like a certain print run of Mario now command more attention than things like the NWC Championship carts blows my mind. I never really thought that we would get to that point.
Well, we have to look at who the people are buying this.
Yes, I didn't think we would get to that point. And I probably should have thought we would get to that point because it happens with everything. And the way Nintendo collecting was going, this was kind of like the last way for people who had already spent a lot of money in Nintendo stuff to kind of keep, I feel like, the interest in Nintendo going, the original Nintendo, the NES. And the pandemic played some role in that and keeping it popular. But in terms of popularity, the original Nintendo Entertainment System had already seen its time in the sun and had kind of worked through its natural course of progression and was on the downturn. And now it's still in the news because of the sealed collectors, but also because people were just playing whatever they had lying around during the pandemic. But yeah, that's really weird to me. And like I said, the biggest thing is how we focus on these minor differences but a lot of people do focus on the minor differences between runs as a way to bring value, I guess, to these otherwise massively produced and released items.
Again, when you say a lot of people, it's not a lot of, I always say, like, this is not a lot of people. Like, this is a small group of people. It is
enough people to get the news out there. And have it discussed, and generate money.
They got the news out there because it was a plan. I mean, sure. We've obviously established this. It was all planned out. Like, it was all, I mean, Carl Jobs did 3 hours of videos on it almost. We've talked about it for hours on length over the years. They had a plan. They bought this stuff in the run-up, since some of them knew about it, or some of the players had this stuff in their collections already.
They
could have done this with anything.
That was the way to keep their investment already. Yeah. That was the way to keep an investment that was falling out of fashion. It was a way to breathe new life into it.
It was not just breathing new life. It's now that they can make millions off of the stuff they couldn't before.
Yes.
New life. It was shot it to the moon, as the crypto bros say. That's what they did. It was. They could have conceived this in another collectibles market, but this was the only one untapped to that extent. This is the only one where they could do it because. It's like whenever you see people talk about this, it's like, the potential. I think these games are undervalued. Which, whenever I say, how is something undervalued? By definition, it's worth what someone's going to pay for it. That's right. What the value is.
Value can change over time, but just because the value of something changes over time doesn't mean value. It was undervalued 10 years ago. That's
yes.
What it was.
That's the value of it. That's the natural progression of where it's gone up and down. That's the value of the object. Until you bring in these collectors that a lot of them didn't collect games before, didn't know game collecting was a thing, and now asking if they want to buy my NWC carts. And it's like, did you know that was a thing like 3 years ago or 4 years ago? Did you know that those existed?
Right.
Or now you're learning about them as a new hot item. Now it's all the FOMO. So like, that's what I mean. It's a smaller group of people. But okay, yeah, that surprised me. But then when you look at all the nefarious things that had happened, it's like, well, you couldn't have expected that. I didn't expect it would be like that. Sure. I really didn't. But obviously, once you saw like the Pawn Stars appearance, we found out early on. We saw, Jim Halpern bought that Mario. That he was part of the people that bought that Mario, part of the group that then put that on Pawn Stars. Something's up. And that's when we were asking the tough questions about that. Why is, you know, why is the grading company valuing the cart? Like, that's ridiculous. And then, so we were kind of on that pretty early with that stuff. But that said, that didn't surprise me the most. I think it surprised me how much it went from the past 8 years where retro games was a lot more niche to now you have NES Classic, Super Nintendo Classic, Genesis Classic, PlayStation Classic, a lot more of these mainstream retro game re-releases that sold millions of them. And then on top of that, you have, you know, Microsoft doing their own, you know, Rare Replay thing. You have the big companies, not just the smaller ones, doing their re-releases. The big companies getting
on board. You can also lump the mini arcade cabinets into this too.
Sure. But in terms of the scale, though, like the large companies, like Nintendo doing it, Sony doing their own mini console, and then following up with, you know, the Switch Online service. And then, like, really, there was this gap in time where, like, it seemed like there wasn't attention paid anymore. It seemed like, to the stuff from, like, the 80s and 90s. It was just a gap to me. And a lot's happened the past 5 years where... Now it's become, I'd say 2016 is probably the day where, or the year where it's like, now it's getting back into people's attention again. It's also the past 5 years, we have a ton more, talk about all the video game documentaries that pop up every other month now.
Right.
Past 5 years, that's happened a lot. So it seems like we've aged enough where we're now the decision makers, we're now the ones in control of, we should be spotlighting the stuff that we grew up with, we should be making these products again. Because 10 years ago, that you would never have saw an NES Classic. Just, it was like, who would have bought it 10 years ago? Like,
yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, we have seen support for retro libraries in some ways, in ways that I never could have imagined in, you know, 2005, I guess.
Yeah, I always thought it would just be weirdos like us that just liked all those old games and had the original hardware. I didn't think it would blow up to the point where... people are now demanding certain games on, you know, the Switch Online. Like, I demand to see Earthbound. I like there's been ways to play them forever, but I guess now it's just, I don't know. It's strange to see that.
Yeah.
It's strange. Nah. Well, a lot of these games were just niche games forever, and you can play them anyway on emulators. So it seems like it's taken back over into now they're commercial products again.
It's interesting to see some of these products that have come out too that cater to the hardcore retro gamer that have taken off too. I never would have thought, you know, 10 years ago that something like the Analog Pocket would have the demand that it does.
Yeah, 10 years now. Ago. I mean, 10 years ago, Analog, they were doing Neo Geo stuff.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like in 10 years, their whole business has been flipped upside down. They started with the, you know, the NT, which I remember was cannibalized Famicom boards, and then they did the Mini. And then they were taken off from there. But yeah, at first it was just like, oh, we're catering to this really niche Neo Geo market at first. And now it's like their products, I don't know how many units they sell, but obviously it's a lot for the business to make a new product every year. So, I mean, they weren't selling that many Neo Geo joysticks compared to what they're selling now, you know?
Right. Yeah.
They just weren't. And then the fact that we've been more accepted, like the handheld revival, I don't think I would have saw that coming. I just don't think I would have saw that like everything now is a handheld or leaning into being a handheld
from
Steam Deck, and the Switch is a handheld.
Steam Deck, Switch, Playdate, Analog Pocket. I mean, four of the hottest tech items for games in the past couple of years are all portables. I actually canceled my Steam Deck yesterday. Not because I don't think it's a cool idea, but because my need for it is just kind of reduced since I upgraded my laptop. I don't really need a replacement to my computer.
I was on the fence, but then I said to myself, how much would I actually use this? Even if I had time to game a lot on the PC, at what point would I want to play some of these first-person shooters on a handheld versus with a mouse? You know what I mean? A mouse and keyboard?
I
just was thinking about, I'm like, it's not going to be a lot of scenarios to me.
I like it, and I could see myself with one in the future, but... in July, when I pre-ordered it, it was going to be a replacement for my last laptop in terms of gaming. Mm-hmm. I had not taken the new job yet. I got the new job. I had a good reason to upgrade my laptop, and suddenly I've got a gaming laptop. So like, yeah. I just don't need it anymore. But I think it's cool. I think it is cool.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. Like I said, like it's undervalued. It's underpriced versus what you get. The components in it
undervalued.
They're losing money on them.
You're so undervalued.
That was part of the appeal. Is like, wow, I could take this to conventions and this would be a powerful computer. I could like render videos off this if I'm, you know. Then I was like, I'm not going to use this that much. I would use a tablet a lot more. So I'm looking, I don't have an iPad. For some reason, I don't have an iPad. And that's the only thing I'm into the ecosystem. I have a MacBook Air, but I use Windows on it. I hate the OS, Mac OS for computers, but
it's
love it.
Great on a phone. It's great on a phone. Awful for computers.
Because you don't want a phone to have a complex OS like the Android phones. I go, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
And you don't want to be in a walled garden on your laptop.
Yes. So they got it flipped there. So yeah, the only thing I like about, as an aside, the only thing I like about Apple phones is that your phone's memory is tied to the fucking board. So if I drop it into the sink or the fucking hot tub, it goes out.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's what's bad about those. That's why I like the one good thing I wish an iPhone had was SD cards. I get it, but they don't want their phones to be hacked. It's a security thing.
Right.
I totally get that. As an aside, though. So, yeah, that's what surprised me. I didn't think retro gaming would come, quote-unquote, mainstream. All these products coming out, all the handheld stuff. And the sealed game stuff has been wacky. But, again, that's could be, like you said, also part of everything's wacky during the pandemic. Maybe sealed games is their version of NFTs. Well, it is pump and dump and greater fool theory. It is. So it's the same. It's the same mentality behind getting people involved.
Yeah, you got to get more people in under you to raise your amount, and eventually
you exit.
Yeah,
and they're stuck with the bag. We got voicemails, Ian. You go to anchor.fm/theCU podcast. Wow, you got the .fm right. Mm-hmm. Proud of you there.
Thanks.
You go. You can leave us comments about how Pat's a Puritan for not wanting a Pokemon getting shot in the face.
Puritan, that is the word I was looking for. It is very puritanical.
Call me a prude.
The sentiment was there.
Yeah, Ian, we know what you're saying, but I had to call that as it was funny.
Hey, boys, how you doing?
Me.
This is Tootsie Daiquiri calling from the Hudson Valley region of New York.
Okay.
Just wanted to stop by, show a little love.
Thanks.
See what's going on.
We find his voice.
If Tommy Two Shoes is giving you any trouble, let me know. I'll have Ginger Snaps take care of it.
Hey! Right.
Now back to business.
All right.
What's going on with this Halo Infinite multiplayer? I mean, me personally, I was always a Halo 3 guy. Level 50s in every ranked playlist. Team Doubles, Slayer, Lone Wolves, Shoddy Snipers, MLG, the whole bit. What's the incentive for me with this multiplayer now? Just to go up against the ever-grinding wheel of microtransactions, cosmetic skins, and more? Anyway, my time's up, boys. Bada-bing.
Hey, what's this world coming to?
Thanks, Tootsie Smackins, or whatever your name was.
I'll call him Johnny Halo. Nikki Halo.
I don't know. I mean, you can still play the multiplayer for, like, the joy of playing the multiplayer, and you don't have to grind against it. But I think what he's getting at is, like, you know, all of these online, you know, games these days, the daily incentives and shit like that the way these games kind of sink their hooks into you and try to get more and more time out of you instead of just playing.
Hey,
and I agree with that.
I play Raid Shadow Legends. I know the
Leggings.
Struggle.
Raid Shadow Leggings.
Am I allowed to have one
Leggings.
Misspeaking?
Ian? I'm on it. You caught me for prude.
That was a misuse of a word, Ian. Come on.
That was a misuse of leggings.
Hello, Pat and Ian. This is Michael out of Toronto, and I was curious about your thoughts on accessibility menus in video gaming. I'm a disabled person who was out of video games for a couple of console generations, and I've been particularly impressed with the rise of accessibility menus, particularly with games like Psychonauts 2 and the new Forza. I was just curious if there was any particular games that stood out for you for accessibility menus. Is that something you pay attention to? Maybe if there's features that we could implement in future games. So, yeah, just curious about your thoughts.
I am lucky enough to not have any major disabilities, so I don't spend a lot of time going into the menus, but it's obviously something I would like to see more of. And I'm glad that more games are opening themselves up to gamers who have disabilities. You know, it sounds silly to mention it, but I am always tickled pink when I see a good color blindness option in a modern video game that, you know, changes, you know, reticle colors and stuff like that. And it really does. It's a huge boost to my enjoyment of the game to actually be able to play it and see it properly. So I can only imagine what it would be like for someone else with a different disability. I'm looking a little bit at the assist features in the Psychonauts 2, for instance, and there's invincibility that you can turn on. There's no fall damage. Oh. Narrative combat, I don't know what that means. Narrative combat gives your guy a buff to combat damage so players can focus more on the story and action taking place without having to be overly strategic. I think these are great ideas, and I think that honestly they should, I mean, if it's not a huge deal, throw them into... throw these into the games. Let people enjoy the game. There's a lot of people who think that it's going to, you know, if I'm not saying force developers to do it, but people are like, oh, if you force developers to do it, it's going to ruin their image or ruin, you know, what their vision of the game. And yes, it very well might, but it's better than a person not being able to experience it all. I do think that personally, if you take the difficulty out of a game like Dark Souls, you've kind of
ruined the point
of what Dark Souls is. But if someone wants to be able to play around with Dark Souls and experience that game and examine the world, I don't see why they shouldn't be able to
get him in easy mode.
I don't. Or right. Easy, yeah. I wouldn't. I would probably just not play the game. But I get it. Not everyone can do that. So, yes, I think that it's a good idea, and there should be more of them.
Hey, Ian, it's Brad from Whippany again.
Whippany!
I know over the years on the podcast, you guys have covered a lot of bad, ill-conceived, or outright fraudulent crowd-funded retro video game products.
I don't remember any.
I was just wondering if there are any that have stuck out to you in the opposite way, something that was really good or something that exceeded your expectations or something that you're really impressed with. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I can't think of any crowdfunded ones that have impressed me. I'm impressed what the Evercade team has done. I am.
I'm impressed with what the Evercade team has done.
They did what they've set out to do. It's not overly extravagant. It's still clever. The little ecosystem they have with the handheld versus the console, and it's reasonably priced.
I think
it's physical media. It's physical. It promised and gave you physical media.
So I can't think of any Kickstarters, but in terms of retro stuff that's done right that I think is always good, I'll just use this opportunity. Yes, the Evercade stuff. Whether or not it's going to be something you use is going to be entirely up to your scenario and what you want to play. However, I think the system, how they present the games, their PR, I think the Evercade is a great product. If you want something to collect that is old games, by all means, go for it.
Doesn't try to do too much.
I think RetroBits stuff is really good in terms of retro releases and re-releases. I think that stuff tends to be very good.
For hardware?
Yeah,
just for software.
Again, when you were talking about like the cases and stuff, their cases are always good. Their print material is always really good. I like all of that. And
I brought that up in relation to the hardware, that's all.
I had one other thing.
Just because all of them promised physical media, and this is the only one that delivered a console with physical media.
Oh, and I like the Retrocade stuff too. I think that was originally maybe a Kickstarter before they went on. I can't recall. Replicade.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Retrocade. Replicade. I think that started as a Kickstarter, and I'm impressed with everything I see from them.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. It's Foxandra from New Jersey.
Joyzy.
At the time of this recording, it is 5 a.m. Do you two want to know what I'm doing right now?
Yes.
5 in the morning?
What?
I'm sitting here with archive.org open, scrolling through images of old shareware collection CDs to see if I recognize the one I got from a computer show back when I was a kid, because apparently I love digging through haystacks for needles. I vaguely remember what the CD looks like, and it has a bootleg version of Street Fighter 2 for DOS that replaced Vega with some dude named Andy. I don't even think it was Andy from King of Fighters. It might have just been some random guy named Andy. Anyway, I'm doing this because there's some garbage FPS on it I played back then that's been stuck in my head for 2 decades that apparently never existed. And I'm not going to describe it because every time I do, people say, oh, it's System Shock. And no, it's not System Shock. Stop telling me it was System Shock. I know what System Shock looks like and it wasn't that. I'm going to go insane if I don't figure this out. Anyway, I was wondering if you guys ever went bonkers trying to remember some old weird game like this too.
I need some sleep, Vox.
Sleep. Lady. No. However, not a specific game necessarily, but a song. I once had a Nintendo background, a video game song stuck in my head. I could not remember what it was for the life of me. It was stuck in my head from my early teens until my early 20s, and one day I had stopped looking for it. I had stopped searching for it. Couldn't figure it out. Bought a used copy of Jurassic Park for the Nintendo at the flea market. Came home. Popped it in. It was the first level music from Jurassic Park that had been stuck in my head for 10 years.
A little psychic stuff going on.
Yeah, it's crazy.
There was a game. Yes, there's boobs involved. Because, you know, I was a teenager.
Boobums.
So we had our version of Sam's Club was BJ's Wholesale in Jersey. This was like, I'd say, early to mid-90s, probably 92, 93. They used to bundle big box PC games that were years old and do like a 3-pack. They would just cellophane them over like $15 for like 3-box games. These weren't popular games. They would have them in a box or whatever. The same way how, KB would have their box of PC stuff that was a few years old. But this
sure.
was, these were bundled packs. There was one game that was scandalous to like a 12 or 13 year old Pat, because I remember on the back of the box, it showed you like trying to like hit on a woman, but it wasn't Leash Larry. And then there was another thing where it looked like it was something like a wet t-shirt thing. But this is like, it wasn't like a really dirty game. I searched for years. It's a game called Bar Games from, I think it's Accolade did it. It's a bunch of mini games. There's air hockey. I think there's darts, but I don't know. There is a little like multiple choice thing to try to hit on someone to like get their number or take him home. But it's PG. But it's like the right things to ask. But there is a wet t-shirt thing, which I believe is both men and women. But it's again. I found the YouTube video. They walk across the stage, and you have to time from above, emptying buckets of water on them. And then the more you do it, the more you reveal the wet t-shirt on it. So this game was in my head for like over 20 years. I'm like, what? I'm like, did I dream seeing this game? Did I dream seeing this?
Power.
And I found it. I found it a couple years ago online. I might have searched like a Banyanware site or whatever. But yeah, Bar Games was mine. That was it. I was like, what the fuck is this game? Did I make this up? How could there be a wet t-shirt game on the console?
Hey, Pat and Ian, it's Sean from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I have a quick question. I am getting ready to move in with my new fiance, and I am trying to figure out a good way to go about insuring my collection. I've started to do the documentation on a majority of it, but I'm just trying to figure out, is there a particular place that you would go through for insurance for a pretty substantial collection?
Okay, there is.
I wish I could help you, but
there is. Collectibles insurance places. There's one that used to always go to Comic-Con every year.
Yeah, I remember.
They always
that.
Had a booth there.
Mm-hmm.
Collectible. What is it? There's the main one is collectibles insurance. There's a couple. Collectinsure.com. That's the main one being advertised here. That's the one I believe that's the main one. In theory, all your personal belongings are part of your homeowners or renters insurance.
Insurance. Yes, I was going to say renters insurance. From what I hear, is actually a very good thing to have.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it covers not just your personal belongings. If I slip and fall in your kitchen, how are you going to cover my expenses? I can sue.
Get the fuck out of my kitchen.
Well, it's too late. I slipped on your cold toppings pizza. So you need, and a lot of, it's required to own a house to have homeowners insurance. Not everywhere, but a lot of places it's required to rent to have renter's insurance. So you're not liable if something happens to you.
Right.
So you can keep paying your rent if you get sued or something happens or something. So the point is that, On your insurance policy, there will be personal belongings to a certain degree that's maxed out, whether it's $50,000, $100,000. if you have other sort forms of collectibles, like sometimes you have to get an extra rider or get more insurance on, like if you have jewelry or whatever, you don't in theory need that. But the problem with video games is that it's not, they don't, the people running the insurance companies have no fucking clue how to price out video games. It's not like pricing out anything else like jewelry or fine art. Like, that's the one positive thing about this insanity the past few years. It helps establish that video games are worth a lot of money in the public eye, so the insurance companies can be like, oh, I see.
Right. Insurance will actually take you seriously.
Yes, they won't just be like, oh, these games are $2 each. You know, say if I lost my NES collection, I will give you $5 a game. I'll be like, what? That's not a replacement cost.
Suck my butt.
Because I've heard that can be a thing where it's like, oh, we'll give you amount of money per game. Thinking that all games are equal. Like,
no.
Like every Genesis game is going to be NBA Live 95. You know, like, no. There's also Gargoyles. There's also, you know, Castlevania Bloodlines. Like, they don't care. So, like, I'm not saying you should go get separate collectibles insurance or not. It's up to, I guess, your insurance company. But you should definitely document everything you have. Videotape it. Have lists of things just so that you can say, hey, listen, this is all the stuff I had, you know. And if something is super, 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 super expensive, you might think about getting, putting your shit in a bank vault or in a, you know, safe deposit box. Like, I have some stuff. All right, I'll do a few more here.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Ian. This is Vince from Northern California. Ian, this question's for you.
Okay.
I noticed I just got a package of Skittles with lime in them. I'm not talking all lime. I mean the normal red Skittles package with lime instead of green apple. Got to know your thoughts, man.
Oh, I'm extremely happy. It's like one of the most joyous occasions. Skittles were my favorite candy growing up. Favorite. Could not beat a bag of Skittles. The beauty with which lemon, lime, orange, grape, and strawberry mixed together. The way every taste of the rainbow was delicious but slightly different. It was a harmony. And then Skittles decided they needed to get fucking fancy, and they replaced lime with green apple.
They went woke. They went broke.
I'm going to hit you.
Why would they do that? Like, why would they think that?
Because they wanted to chase short-term headlines.
To get news. Gotcha.
So they did, like, a contest where they were like, oh, we're going to replace lime with green apple. And then they were like, vote on it. And then people were like, yeah, we love green apple. And then, like, within a year, people were like, this sucks. Green apple does not mix at all.
It's not citrusy.
At all.
It's not citrusy.
Strawberry, grape, lemon, orange, and lime.
It took out a citrus.
It completely threw off the balance of Skittles and ruined what was one of the most delicately, finely balanced candies.
Lemon and lime. Lemon, green apple? No.
In history.
That's bad.
So, 7 years, 8 years, they've let this happen, if not longer. And this isn't the first time they've done it either. Ooh. First time they did it, they took it back to lime very quickly. But for like 8 years, we've had to deal with lime. And then last summer, with green apple. Last summer, they did all lime bags, which I got some of.
Okay.
But it was a slap in my goddamn dick. Because I told Skittles, I got on the Twitter and I told them to their face. I said, Skittles, this is fucking bullshit. We just want lime back in the regular bag. I don't need a whole bag of lime Skittles.
Then you filter some into each bag you get.
You're a fucking asshole. Yeah. So that's what I did. I went and I bought regular bags of Skittles with the green apple.
Take out the green apple.
I took out all the green apples and I counted and I replaced them with lime. And I made multiple bags of original and I shook them. And for a couple months, I enjoyed really delicious original Skittles. Right. And then they were like, yeah, we're going to have them back in stores by October. They did not. Must be that chip shortage that's affecting the Amico. It's affecting Skittles as well.
Skittle shortage?
They did not get the lime back in the regular bags until January. But this month. Okay. But if you're asking, have I purchased Skittles since? The answer is oh, yes.
Oh, Jesus.
The answer is oh, yes. I have purchased a lot of Skittles since. I told Skittles all they needed to do to get me back as a customer, to make it my sixth food group, again, was to put lime back in. And they did.
I'm glad, Ian.
That's really the big news. That's the big, big news of this 300th episode is lime is back.
Our Skittles national nightmare is over.
Thank God.
Hey, guys. It's John from Houston, Texas again. I was just thinking about when I was a little kid going up to Blockbuster on Friday or Saturday, and there were some games that I just wouldn't pick up because of the horrible box art. What are some games that y'all can think of that have horrible box art, omitting Mega Man 1, of course, that are actually really great games to turn on to people? Thank you.
Half the TurboGrafx library. We talked about something like
that. Yeah, the TurboGrafx library is bad.
It's horrifying how bad. It's like a 10-year-old did the art on some of those.
The Master System graphics, box art is pretty bad, same person. Yeah, it's definitely different, but it's very, very simple. The Alex Kidd box art is like some of the worst.
It's this little fist.
Hey!
The pro wrestling one of the guys holding a decapitated person's holding a head in a headlock, but it's his head. It's like who approved that?
Right, it doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Like the tennis game's just a tennis racket. Like the sports games are really like at baseball. Here's a bat. Like it's so simplistic. It's insane. It doesn't make any sense. In terms of like NES games, there's a lot of NES games that bad box art. When you really Ghost Line is one of the ones that I always go to.
Mm-mm.
Where it's it's like an 80s video.
Uh-huh.
With a blonde on the cover. It's like, what game is this? Like, what is this about? You can't tell.
Promo art for the new Bengals album or some shit.
Do you think that this generation is going to last longer? Do you think we're going to move on in the standard 5-ish years? Or are we going to see the market kind of stop with the hardware upgrades? Curious what you think.
We're always going to have to upgrade hardware, but I think these 5-year, 6-year things won't. It only makes sense if the manufacturers need more money. Like if that's how they make their money. Like every 6 years, you need a new console. Every 7 years, otherwise, I think we're getting to the point where like we're going to run out of. We're going to be diminishing returns, and the old hardware will be acceptable as long as it's supported. Because we're always seeing that with computers. It's just okay. Get a new graphics card every 5 years. And you should be good. You know, like the speed is becoming less and less an issue. It's now just, is memory faster? And what's the power of your GPU? That's what's been happening more and more with stuff. But, you know, like I said, it depends on if they support it. If they stop supporting PS5 games 5 years from now, you got to get the PS6. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Because we still got to do the ray tracing. That's the final frontier. Get that ray tracing going.
Are hardware upgrades as required as frequently now? No, I don't think you need them as much, but I think we're going to see them just as often because it's a money, like you said, it's a money making.
Yeah, unless it's Microsoft that says, you know, we're done with consoles. Game Pass took over the universe in 5-10 years, so we don't care anymore.
Right.
We don't have to worry about manufacturing shit and having chip shortages, and who cares if the profit margin isn't that great anyway, if at all, on this stuff. Yeah, we'll see. Do one more.
Sure.
We'll check in with
special someone.
I don't know. This is a different person, I think.
Hey, you don't know me. Tommy leave his phone here last night. This is Tony. I'm his ninth cousin, Tony Tallarico from Palermo, you know, Sicily. Yeah, Tommy come over here last night. He say, hey, Tony, I want to show you this thing, Mico. I say, oh, Mico, like a friend. So I plug it in, I sit down, I play with it for 5 minutes. I said, this is not my friend. I said, how much money people pay for this? He said, $250. I said, oh, that's not so bad, $2.50. He said, no, $200. I said, $200? Madonna, pazzesco. Shit, if my mother, she had 40 kids. 40 kids. We had no money for nothing. No toys, no games, no soccer ball, baseball. Forget about it. If we had this thing in the house, I mean, in 1962, we never would have touched it. Nobody would have touched it. Maybe the cat. The cat would use it for piss and this shit. Like, hey, come on, the box, the little box. Anyway, I got to get this guy's phone back now. It's full of the bitch in the clip thing.
All right, Tony. Tony, let me know if you ever get Tommy's phone again, Tony. Hey, it's not Tony.
Oh, the piss of shit.
Well, that was fun.
Well, that was that certainly was a 300th episode of the CU podcast.
It was a spectacular.
It was a spectacular episode. It's good.
Maybe we'll do a celebration stream or something. We'll think about it.
Yeah. Think about something.
Do something live. We'll do it live. Fuck it.
We'll do it live.
All right. That's Ian. Tom and Jerry shirt proud. Showing through. I'm Prudish Pat Conchie. We'll see you later.
Prudish Patrick. Puritanical Pat.
Bye-bye.